Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
Hello, this is Debbie Powell. I'm the Master Gardener Coordinator for Calaveras and Tuolumne Counties, and you are with us at Over the Garden Gate, which is a show hosted by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. And today I have with me Lisa Page, who is the president of the Tuolumne Master Gardener Program. And Lisa has this phenomenal experience with vegetables, but we're going to talk about tomatoes today. Welcome, Lisa.
Hello, Debbie.
It's good to see you here. And I got to ask you, how long have you been growing tomatoes?
I would say about 27 years.
That's quite an experience. And you actually do something different. I normally, when I buy tomato plants, I buy the starts at the store. And I don't actually even start mine from seed, but you start yours from seed.
Yes, I like starting from seed because you have a wider variety to choose from. You can choose from even for what elevation that you live at, and you can look for attributes that will work. Let's say for, there are some varieties that were bred in like Siberia that will grow at a higher elevation and will handle cooler nighttime temperatures and still produce fruit. So,
that's...
and you have such a wide variety of tomatoes, colors, taste, size of plants, size of tomatoes, it's an endless choice of things that you can come up with. Where the nurseries nowadays are getting better with the variety of heirloom tomatoes that they offer, but I find that starting from seed and then saving my own seed from those open pollinated plants, that they become acclimatized to my particular growing area.
How interesting. So how do you start this process? How do you start from seed?
Well, most packets or seed starting things will tell you 8 to 10 weeks prior to your putting out date, which would be at right after your last frost date. So I tend to start, I try to get started the beginning of March usually.
Okay.
I gather my materials, my seed starting medium, my pots and seed starting cells, I call them, you know, trays, all that. I gather it all up. I've picked out my varieties, and then I basically plant the seed. I put them under fluorescent lights, probably 12 to 14 hours of light a day. You want to keep your nighttime temperatures no lower than 55, because that'll slow down the germination. So a good range is 60 to 65 at night, and then what would be their light when the lights are on, which
mm-hmm.
would be like replicating daylight, you would like to try to stay 70 to 75 degrees.
Okay.
And then when they have sprouted, you can look for your strongest plant and you can thin down to that. You just snip off the littler ones that you pick one.
Uh-huh.
And then after it's got its first set of true leaves, I try to wait till there's pretty good size, I don't know, maybe
right.
3 inches, but they'll have their first
okay.
set of true leaves. And then I'll transplant them into a larger container. Every time that I transplant them up, I bury the stem,
mm-hmm.
if I can, up to the lowest set of leaves, because it'll
okay.
get roots all along the stem, because there's these little hairs, if you look at a tomato stem,
mm-hmm.
tomato plant stem, and they're each a potential root. So every time I transplant it up, if I bury it again, by the time I put it out, it's got a really strong root system.
Gosh, that's great.
So a lot of times by the time that I'm ready to put them out, they'll be at the minimum the size of the starts that you have in the nurseries for sale. A lot
mm-hmm.
of times they're larger.
Oh.
So once again, when I plant them in the ground, I do that again. I will take off a few sets of leaves and bury them down one more time.
Okay.
Really deep. when I plant them, I like to put a little Epsom salt in the bottom of the soil. It's supposed to have an effect on helping with blossom end rot problems.
Oh.
I've done it for, well, probably 27 years now. But hopefully this is after you've amended your soil.
Okay, actually getting your soil ready for
prior to the
tomato
this.
Plants.
But, you know, they're pretty forgiving. Tomatoes can grow like weeds, really. They can.
They can.
Yeah.
That's encouraging.
So it's really important that you do mulch around your plants, especially if you're planting really close to, like for up here, it's in Tuolumne County, like the middle of May. And I'm talking from probably elevation of around downtown Sonora upward. I mean, obviously, when you get above somewhere like Soulsbyville,
mm-hmm.
when you get to Twain Heart and up,
right.
you're going to be planting a little later
okay.
than the middle of May. I was told when I moved up here, don't plant before Mother's Day.
Right.
But with the way that the climate has shifted in our, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. We've had some Mays in the last few years where at the end of May we had 40-degree temperatures for a week at night,
yeah.
and they don't do well.
Right.
And if you don't mulch and it rains and the soil splashes up on the tomato leaves, you can get pathogens from the soil that get splashed up on the leaves.
Oh, my gosh.
Which can create early blight or late blight, which
okay.
is really, it's pretty sad because the branches just start dying off, even sometimes when they have a tomato hanging on them. So
oh, my gosh.
It's very important. And if you put them out earlier, just be prepared to go out and protect them. I was telling a friend the other day, she said she'd already planted.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that's probably fine. I said, do you have some 5-gallon buckets handy? You can
okay.
just run out there and put a 5-gallon bucket over
idea.
The top.
That's easy.
Yeah. Or even if you've got some pots.
Right.
1-gallon or 5-gallon
just anything.
Pots, anything like that. Or if they're in a place where you've got a cage over them, you can throw an old bed sheet or something
okay.
over them to protect them.
Well,
that'll also stop some of that splashing up of the dirt if you haven't
okay.
got the mulch down. So mulching is absolutely important. And not only for that particular reason, but as we go into the season, it helps conserve the water. It doesn't evaporate so much. And if you lay your mulch down thick enough, I use straw because it's inexpensive. I can do it. It's easy to spread.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really draw too much nitrogen from the soil as it's sitting on it. Because
right.
anything that's sitting on the soil that's an organic material is going to tie up some of the available nitrogen. Because as those microorganisms feel that touching the soil, they're going to want to start working on decomposing it.
Oh,
so when
right.
they do that, some of your nitrogen becomes unavailable to the plant until that microorganism is done decomposing that particular thing. So if in some cases you have to add a little supplemental nitrogen, but if you put too much nitrogen, you'll end up with a bushy
right.
plant and
no
fruit.
Oh gosh.
So
we don't
balance.
Want that.
So you know, if you just get a good, your three numbers are equal, that's a good way to be pretty sure you're not going to get excess nitrogen.
Okay.
But straw, I'll do it like 3-4 inches deep. And any weeds that pop up from the straw, it's usually a grass.
Okay.
Because I don't care how many times I've asked if something's weed-free. I've never gotten a straw that is weed-free.
Yeah.
But if it's deep, the only weeds that generally come up far from the seeds in the straw, and they pull up so easy that I just lay them back on top of this.
Oh, good idea. Now, do you, after all these years of growing tomato plants, do you have some favorites that you absolutely say, oh my gosh, it's not a great tomato year unless I grow this?
I would say Brandywine, Cherokee Purple, and I have, let's see, oh, there's one called a Kellogg Breakfast. It's a yellow tomato.
Kellogg Breakfast.
It's about the size of I've had up to, 8 to 10 ounce tomatoes at times.
Oh my gosh.
In years past, I've had some tomatoes up to a pound of, like, that would be on the Brandywines.
That's huge.
Now, when you're growing, those are all, like, later season tomatoes, so you're going to be waiting until probably end of August, maybe middle if you're lucky, into September before you're actually getting a harvest off of those. So
okay.
In the meantime, I'll try to grow something like a Better Boy is a good variety. It's a hybrid. It's not a heirloom, but you get a nice red tomato. It comes on earlier,
right.
And you get a good harvest from them. And,
okay.
most hybrids are bred for disease resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the letters that corns correspond with a particular virus, like tobacco mosaic virus or
right.
something like that. And that's resistant, though.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that. So
okay.
Resistant, it does not mean it won't get it, but the likelihood is less.
Pretty slim.
Yeah. So
Oh, that's a good strategy.
And then cherry tomatoes, I always have to have a Sun Gold growing. Which
oh,
is
those
another
are
hybrid.
Great.
Nice thing about cherry tomatoes, if I don't have enough room, because I get carried away with how many tomato plants I grow, I'll put them in big, like 15-gallon pots, and they
okay.
do just fine.
Oh,
just
so
have to remember, tomatoes in pots will do just fine any variety, really.
Okay.
But you don't want to go with too small of a pot, because even in the large pot, you're going to have to water a lot more often than
yeah.
you do in when your bed is in the ground, or if you have a raised bed. So.
Right. How about, I think some people don't realize they have enough sun. Do tomatoes take quite a bit of sun, or how do
yeah,
you figure
that
out? Yeah,
they prefer, they'd like a good, 12 to 14 hours if they can get it. But you can do 8 to 10 hours of
okay.
full sun. It may take a little bit longer, but you'll still get tomatoes.
You'll still get tomatoes.
Yeah.
Well, that's encouraging.
Yeah.
I mean, that really is.
So, like, I've told people that they say, I don't have enough sun. I'll ask them, do you have a patio or a deck that gets
mm-hmm.
sunlight for this amount of time? And they say, yes. I say, well, you can grow a tomato in a pot
okay.
and still are able
right.
to. Like, if you live in an apartment
mm-hmm.
and you have a balcony or a patio, but you have full sun all day, you can grow one tomato plant and... For a small family,
uh-huh.
nice cherry tomato plant, especially if you have kids. They love cherry tomatoes.
Oh,
so.
The sun glow. I have to admit, that's one of my favorites.
So you set a bowl of cherry tomatoes on the table for kids. A lot of times they can eat that as a snack instead of munching on stuff that's not quite as good for them. So.
Oh, they're really good. Now, just kind of curious with Brandywine, I know quite a few people are probably familiar, but some people may not be. And what kind of fruit, what does that, I mean,
it's
why
like a,
is
it's,
that so
it's,
special?
Well, I think we're all pretty much familiar with the term beefsteak tomato.
Okay, meaning
you,
a much
it's a
larger.
Huge, yeah, it's a good sized tomato. It would be a slicing tomato, like when I was a child, it is what really the memory is from eating from my aunt's garden. She
okay.
would have the large Brandywine style tomatoes. They're irregular shaped a lot of times,
mm-hmm.
but you could just slice them and eat them like that. So they would make tomato sandwiches with them.
Oh.
And it has
what
really,
about the flavor?
The flavor's just, it's really intense. There's probably a medium to high acid level. So if you're a person that doesn't really like tomatoes because of the acid flavor,
okay.
It's not a bad flavor, but you
mm-hmm.
can taste it.
Sure.
From the citric acid in it, I guess it's citric acid. But I could talk all day about tomatoes.
Well, it's a wonderful subject. I could eat tomatoes all
Me
day,
too.
Especially some of the varieties you were talking about. So thank you very much, and we're going to say goodbye.
Okay. Thank you, Debbie.
This is KAADLP 103.5 FM, Sonora, California.
This is Debbie Powell, the Master Gardener and Coordinator for both Calaveras and Tuolumne County, and I happen to be in Calaveras today talking to Odile Morrison, who is not only a Calaveras Master Gardeners, but she's involved in a nonprofit, which is Gardens to Grow. Good morning, Odile. Thank you so much for being here today.
Good morning.
And this movement, it's actually a movement in Calaveras County that you're hoping to actually provide a model for anybody else that wants to do it, and that's to have a school garden in every school. And how did that start off?
Actually, I do a lot of volunteer work in the schools, and I have for the past 8 years or so. And Autumn and Kevin Hesse are teachers in the school district, and we started working together on this. Autumn and Kevin have actually been working on it for a long time. We've started working on this together in the last 8 years with the view of having a garden in every school. And actually, in Calaveras Unified School District, we do have a garden in every school now. So we do have that model up and running, and we also link in the nutrition educators. There's a strong nutrition component in the garden lessons that are taught in those gardens. And it's just a movement that's building pretty quickly. I mean, it's taken like 8 years or so to get to this point, but now we're gathering momentum, and I think it really is becoming a successful program. The school district actually are integrating the curriculum, or developing curriculum to teach as part of lesson time now, and some of the schools already do this.
To incorporate the garden,
yeah.
Actually, and that encompasses science and
yeah.
math and
exactly.
some
so it
other
will,
subjects.
Yeah. It will be linked directly to the standards for California, so particularly science and math, but there's no reason, I mean, we do teach like art, we teach English, there's a lot that you can teach in a garden, and teachers do have the opportunity to teach their lessons in the garden at some of the schools if they would like to do so. So I know a lot of them take that opportunity as well. So I know a couple of teachers in the elementary schools who will do art projects in the
right.
garden.
Oh, how fascinating.
Kind of, so it's not always focused on gardening. It is an outdoor
right.
classroom venue for other lessons as well.
Gosh, that's wonderful. And so all the children that are exposed to the garden now, because the Calaveras Unified School District encompasses elementary schools, middle school, and the high school.
That's right.
So that's all the way from kindergarten to being a senior at the high school. Is that correct?
Exactly, yeah. And actually, the gardens change. It's quite interesting because I followed my own children through the school district. And so we started Valley Springs Elementary School, which now for Gardens to Grow In is kind of the model garden for schools. It's a large teaching garden that incorporates a mission garden that was a fourth grade project, an orchard area. We have grapevines, and we have the annual and perennial vegetable beds as well.
Now, I've seen that garden, and it's pretty amazing because you actually have an outdoor kitchen, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Where you could prepare food directly from the garden, and students can taste it?
Yeah, exactly. And actually, the nutrition educators have a program of visiting the schools. The UC Cooperative Extension nutrition educators visit, I know in Valley Springs particularly, they visit the school and they do a lesson on Harvest of the Month, which is our seasonal vegetable fruit of the month, and they do a tasting and a lesson around the nutritional components of that that particular piece of produce, and that is replicated in the schools around the county as well.
That is wonderful. What amazes me is throughout this county, believe it or not, some students just do not have access to fresh produce. People don't realize, but there's schools maybe in very rural areas. I mean, basically Calaveras County is one rural area, but there's some areas that are more rural than others,
mm-hmm.
and they just really don't have access to produce. I'm thinking about maybe West Point or Railroad Flat that are physically not that far away, but they don't really have substantial grocery stores that can provide produce for the students, so they just don't have access to it.
Exactly, and that's one of the things that we focused on too, is we really teach the students from very young that eating seasonally and eating what you can grow locally really is the answer to having a healthy diet, because first of all, it's extremely cheap to eat seasonally and locally. You're not you're not buying things out of season like oranges that are very costly, but when oranges are in season, same with tomatoes. Tomatoes can be like $6 a pound in winter, and they're maybe 50 cents a pound if you grow them yourself in the summertime when they're in season. So that's a focus that we have. And also introducing new fruits and vegetables to students, ones that they may not have tried or not tried in a particular way. So they might try something raw that they would usually have cooked,
right,
that kind of thing. So to vary the diet and increase the consumption of fruits and vegetables that are grown locally and in season is one of our focuses.
That's huge. That's a huge focus. And they're part of what the university has identified as a future problem is actually diabetes. They're predicting that more people are going to be diabetic, and eating from the garden is extremely healthy. But now, have you ever had a problem with children refusing to eat from the garden? Does that ever come up?
Children, you never know what they're going to do, but yes. Yeah, well, actually, we find that the younger children particularly are very open to trying new things. And we actually have encountered some problems with parents actually modeling behavior that prevents their child from tasting new things. So the parent will say, as we offer maybe jicama or something, "Oh, well, you don't like that."
Oh.
And or the parent will refuse to taste it. And when you see that behavior, that the child actually is reaching their hand out to try the jicama and takes their hand away. So we do recognize that there's an education process, not just for the students, but for families and communities as a whole, to be a little more adventurous in terms of what they consume and be more conscious of eating fresh and local rather than processed and frozen. There's actually nothing really wrong with frozen food. It is a good way of preserving food.
Sure.
But if you have a bounty of local fresh produce, really the focus on that, you would get a better nutritional balance,
right,
from that. And talking of diabetes, kind of related to that, and I'm not really aware of the statistics, but I'm aware just generally, I know that is a concern in around the world, actually, in Western societies particularly, that the consumption of heavily processed and heavily salted and sugared foods is a huge issue,
right,
and contributes obviously to poor health around the world, particularly in the richest countries, which is kind of ironic.
I know, isn't
it's
that strange?
And,
it
is. And also, it does tend to, from my observation, it does tend to affect poorer communities more. Because the availability of cheap processed food, particularly fast food, then that food's
right,
available, people are hungry, they will eat that. So if we have cheap, locally grown produce available, that is something to counteract that whole issue of eating too much processed food, which is a whole other conversation,
right,
we could have,
right,
at another time,
sure,
and probably better with a dietitian than me, but it is a known issue. And then in Calaveras Unified, I think nearly all of our schools, or possibly all of our schools, have over 50% of the student population receive free or reduced cost meals, which means they are,
right,
on very low or incredibly low incomes.
Yes.
The income qualification is pretty low to qualify for those free and reduced school meals. So we also feel we have some kind of obligation in terms of talking about healthy nutrition, but with an awareness of the cost.
Right.
And again,
right,
local and seasonal produce addresses that,
right,
very well, I think.
Just in curious, what kind of items are you growing right now in the gardens? I mean, what can students look forward to eating from the garden?
Well, right now is like strawberry season, so that's
strawberry season.
Every student's favorite.
I love strawberries.
I'm the same. As soon as I see a strawberry, I pick it and eat it. I think not many strawberries make their way to people's tables from our garden.
Oh, absolutely.
They're eaten on site. After thorough hand washing, of course.
Yes, thank you for putting that in.
So the other thing that I should point out, talking of hand washing and eating from the garden, is we really strive to use organic gardening practices. We don't our gardens aren't certified organic because that is a whole procedure in itself, but we do use compost that we make ourselves.
Oh.
We use, if we do use fertilizer, we use organic, but we do really strive. We use, we have vermiculture going at quite a few schools, and so we use the worm
That's
compost.
That's exciting, vermiculture,
yeah.
Using worms to actually turn your leftovers into compost.
Exactly.
Actually, some of the most expensive compost in the world if you go to a nursery.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. We haven't got bats yet. That's the other one.
Oh.
But some of the schools do have chickens, and again, the chicken bedding with the you know, aged chicken bedding is another great source for composting. So that's, you know, one of the focuses too is, you know, you look at compost and you mention the cost of compost.
Right.
We try and teach in the schools that, you know, growing your own vegetables can actually be a zero cost exercise. We get lot of our seed donated.
You've got my interest.
A lot of our seed is donated. And so we do often have the students, you know, they grow their own salad bowl.
Mm-hmm.
The containers we usually get donated to. So there is an opportunity for children to take growing food home, plants home, seeds home, if they have a garden where they can plant, which again is another challenge, and the water to irrigate. But we do send produce home with the students regularly in full harvest season. Students take bags of food home.
That is wonderful.
As well. So we strive to be a community-focused gardening program,
right,
as well, in terms of we share the bounty of the garden without any cost.
That is great. Mm. Besides strawberries, what else are you growing?
Yeah, I meandered off topic there onto something else. Yes, strawberries, which I think we
wonderful.
Should focus
it's
on.
It's all good.
We love strawberries. So, yes, strawberry season. Actually, that kind of ties into the Harvest of the Month program that the nutrition educators and public health run throughout the county.
Okay.
We have the nutrition educators have worked on a curriculum and selected Harvest of the Month produce for the next 2 years. And so we can tie into that as we're doing any kind of activities in the garden around seasonality. So
sure.
That helps.
Mm-hmm.
There's recipes available. And again, this is kind of another topic probably for another show, but we, the district did receive with UC Partnership a grant from the California Department of FA?
It was small crops.
Yeah, we have specialty
crop grant.
Block grant. But I can't remember the acronym CDFA.
Oh,
and I can't remember what
California
the actual
Department of
Food and Agriculture, isn't
right.
it?
Right.
Is that what it is?
Farming
and Agriculture, something like that. Our acronym, whatever it is. But we did receive a very substantial grant for a 2-year program to promote specialty crop consumption in our school district. So again, we've tied Harvest of the Month into that, and that's another nice
piece of education that's
readily available through the UC Cooperative Extension
mm-hmm.
material. So we're partnering with UC to do that. The school district and UC are partnering on that project.
Which is wonderful.
Yeah.
And so just kind of going back to the garden, are you growing any beans for the kids or tomatoes?
Tomatoes is a little early.
Okay.
We've had a fairly cool spring and a very wet spring, which has been wonderful, but neither of which really is great for tomatoes.
Okay.
And we also garden in several different elevations in the school district here.
Oh, that's true.
We go from around 700 feet to
about 3,500 foot elevation.
Yeah. And I was actually in Murphy's,
which
is it's probably one of the highest elevations of the in this. It's actually in Bret Harte School District, but in Calaveras County. The other day, and the farmer that I was speaking to up there is not planting summer produce yet.
Oh, because it's just a little
keeping
bit too early.
And we can get late frost. So the rule in Calaveras County is plant summer crops after Frog Jump, which is coming up next, the 17th,
yes,
I think.
Yes, right around there. So that is a great rule. And believe it or not, Odile, I know this just came to an end way too quick, but I want to thank you so much for joining us at Over the Garden Gate, brought to you by the Tuolumne Master Gardeners. Goodbye.
Goodbye. You're very welcome.